You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, good to have you with us. Welcome along to the William Hill NFL podcast, week number 2 in the National Football League, coming to you live. Dave Kellner here alongside the Beating the Book podcast expert Gil Alexander, who joins us on the line live from Las Vegas. First of all, good morning to you, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this weekend's American football. And after last week, congratulations in order, Gil. It was a good week. First week, always nice to get off to a winning start.
Yeah, 4-1 against the spread with the Super Contest picks given at the end of the show. And all I need, Dave, is 16 more of those, and you're talking to the winner.
I have my fingers crossed, Gil. I have my fingers crossed.
No problem.
It should be easy, shouldn't it, Gil?
Oh, no, it's so easy. So easy. It's so difficult. It really is. I mean, it's one of the hardest sports to beat over long term, but we're going to give it a go.
We are indeed. Let's start by reflecting on what we saw last night. Denver winning against Kansas City. Kansas City might have been the better of the two teams last night, but as we've mentioned on previous podcast, Gil, it's about turnovers in this sport, and Kansas City turned the ball over and Denver took advantage.
They did. I mean, was that enough excitement for you last night? That was unbelievable. And by the way, it not only applies to the end of the game yesterday, but also if you had the Chiefs in the first half. They were minus 2.5 in the first half. They were 14-0, you know, it was 14-0 with 2 minutes left in the first half approximately. And as you say, turnovers kill. And just as Peyton Manning delivered a pick six, I don't know what the Chiefs do in terms of, you know, their clock management at the end of each half and at the end of the game, but that's Andy Reid's staple, and Alex Smith threw a terrible pick at the end of the first half. It allowed the Broncos to tie it up, and then we all saw what happened at the end. Good Lord. I mean, Jamal Charles fumbling the ball away and the game away. Didn't expect that.
No, not from a player of his repute and experience as well, Gil. It was a surprise. And a lot of talk in the lead-up to that match was whether Peyton Manning could continue to carry the Denver offense. Have we seen enough this season to lay that to rest, or is there still some doubt about whether he can produce long-term and going forward he's the quarterback at the franchise?
I don't think we laid it to rest at all. I thought he looked weak-armed. There were some passes he made towards the sidelines that looked like moon balls that were going to bring rain, and it just was startling to watch. I mean, not startling in the sense that he's 39 years old, but I don't think we've answered questions about Manning. If you looked at his body language at the end of the game after they had won, it almost looked apologetic from him, and I think that's going to plague, or his decline is going to plague the Broncos, and it's going to be the Broncos' story all season long.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Let's get stuck into this weekend's matches, Gil, and we're going to look at the four televised matches here in the United Kingdom. We'll start with the New England Patriots at the Buffalo Bills. The Patriots are 5-6. The Bills, even money. The spread here, the New England Patriots -1 at 10-11. The Buffalo Bills +1. At 10-11, 6 p.m. start time in the UK. This line set at 1. The Patriots giving the number here, Gil. Have we seen any line movement, first of all?
No, not really. It's sitting at -1. Again, we do this about 48 hours before game time. But it has stayed steady at -1.
Usually, I'd start by talking about Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, but the focus this week might be on Rex Ryan and his defense, because incredible performance from the Bills last week to limit the Indianapolis Colts in that 27-14 home win. The question is, can they replicate that performance against the Patriots this week?
That really is the question. And by the way, just about the line movement, at one time it was 1.5, but that was a while ago and it settled in at 1. But essentially no line movement because it's in the no man's land between a pick 'em and 3. But yeah, you said it, Dave. It's, what do you really believe in this game? Do you believe the Patriots as they are wonderful and great perennially? Or do you believe in this Buffalo Bills team that just looked spectacular against Andrew Luck last week in holding the Colts to 4.5 yards per play, in forcing 3 turnovers, in shutting out Andrew Luck and the Colts until the final minute of the third quarter? I think there's 2 key stats here, and this isn't going to, let me just say in advance, Dave, it's not going to clear up anything for anybody. But this is the interesting thing. Since 2009, Tom Brady's total QBR score, that is a quarterback rating from ESPN in the U.S., based on a scale of 0 to 100. His quarterback rating against the Jets, where Rex Ryan coached all these years before this year, is 54. 50 is average. Just above average. It's by far the worst mark for Brady versus any team. But 13 games worth of that, Ryan and the Jets still managed to only go 4-9 straight up against the Patriots. And since we have a short spread here, straight up actually applies.
Yes.
Another way of looking at it, same sort of thing, is that the Bills' defense is the number one in an advanced statistic called expected points allowed since the start of 2014. So their performance last week is very consistent with how good of a football team, or how good of a defense anyway, they were last year. Brady's total QBR, though, against top 10 defenses in EPA, just to sort of gauge Brady against top-flight defenses, 78.6 total QBR, 18 touchdowns against just 7 interceptions. So Brady, the greatness of Brady, if you will, seems to trump all of that.
It does, and you mentioned a couple of key statistics there with Belichick and the New England Patriots going 9-4 against Ryan when he was in control at the Jets. The Buffalo Bills historically have an awful record against the New England Patriots as well. They've lost 21 of the last 23, and one of those wins came when New England were resting players as well, Gil, so you can almost write that one off.
Yeah, I mean, really, it is. You're right. It's 21 of 22 when they're trying. That's an amazing stat, Dave, and I don't know, before I did research in this game, I don't know that I was aware of it. When I saw it, I was like, really? I mean, yeah. I knew they dominated him, but I had no idea it was like that. But it makes sense. The Bills haven't been good. Brady's been there the whole time for the Patriots over that span. But the Bills do have Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback now, and Tyrod Taylor is a guy who's getting his first start in his 5th season, and this is how NFL quarterbacks used to come up. They used to be able to sit on the bench for years, holding a clipboard, having a headset on, learning the offense slowly. Now, with salary caps and the amount of money they give these rookies, the pressure to play them right out of the chute is so great that they just get thrown into the fire. Well, Tyrod Taylor has come up the old school way, and at least the results in 1 week were spectacular for the Bills.
Yeah, he went 14 of 19 for 195 yards and a touchdown. It is so unusual for people this side of the pond anyway, Gil, that this, a lot of people will have thought, oh, this guy's just been drafted because we've never seen him before. But he has had a lot of experience watching different quality quarterbacks. And he did beat EJ Manuel, who was a number one pick, and Matt Castle to the job as well. So there must be some foundation to suggest that he can go on and at least manage the game for the Bills. And that's what they need this week, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess the way you look at it, quite frankly, Dave, between you, me, and everyone listening, is don't mess this up, Tyrod.
Precisely.
You know, your defense is so good. But really, quarterback play in the NFL, there's only a handful of great ones. So if you can just be an above-average one, and I think Tyrod Taylor will be, and I think he's the Bills quarterback for the whole season, barring injury, I think he'll be great for them. And in this particular game, as great on defense as they were last week, they're getting back Marcell Dareus, are the Bills, on their defensive line. The Patriots, by the way, will be getting back LeGarrette Blount, but I think the Bills win in that little mano a mano. So I think all of that in the wash, it's one big colossal no play for me because I don't know which way to go, and it's not a game that, given a choice, I'd want to, you know, play. I'd much rather sit out and eat and drink and watch it.
I like the Bills there, incidentally. Looking forward to that one, though. The New England Patriots at the Buffalo Bills, Sunday, 6 p.m. Let's move on to a divisional clash. This is the Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles, 9:25 p.m. start time in the UK. The Dallas Cowboys on the money line, 9-5 here with William Hill. The Philadelphia Eagles are 5-11. And the spread, the Cowboys plus 5 points, 10-11. The Eagles minus 5 points is 10-11. This is a divisional clash in the NFC East, and one that Gil has a little bit of extra spice following the Cowboys' decision to pay Dez Bryant and allow DeMarco Murray to go to the Eagles in free agency in the offseason. And at this moment in time, maybe a decision that has backfired, given that Dez Bryant is out for a considerable amount of time following a broken foot in last weekend's match. So maybe they're regretting the decision now to leave DeMarco Murray on the sidelines and let him go into free agency.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe the construct is they could either have, you know, it was either or, if they could only have one of those, Bryant or DeMarco, then I think the Cowboys probably make the right move.
Yes.
Dez Bryant is perhaps a generational wide receiver, certainly a perennial All-Pro. I don't know if they could have fit both in, but you're right. For whatever reason, Dallas decided, hey, we have this guy, DeMarco Murray, who we gave the ball to 350 times last year and basically was our MVP. He did everything for us. He kept our defense off the field. He moved the chains on offense. He made life so easy for Tony Romo. We won the NFC East because of it. We should have gone to the NFC Championship if not for a no-catch call in Green Bay. And yet, unprecedented, they let DeMarco go to a division rival, as it turns out. And by the way, after the game last week in, you know, Philly, DeMarco Murray, the game in Atlanta, I should say, for the Eagles, DeMarco Murray was very candid. He was taken aback. He was sort of shocked at how few touches he got in the game. He's so used to getting the ball so much in Dallas that in this Chip Kelly offense, they got a lot of mouths to feed, as they say, Dave. He is but one of many. So he was a little taken aback by that in the Eagles' loss. And I guess we all saw how miraculous, how gifted Dallas wins was over the Giants.
Yeah, that was incredible, wasn't it? What were the Giants doing there, Gil?
Oh, that, I mean, it is incomprehensible. We cannot overstate how botched that was, especially from a quarterback in Eli Manning and a head coach in Tom Coughlin, who I guess, based on their two Super Bowl wins together, are headed to the Hall of Fame. But not only did they botch a third down and short, where you obviously run the ball and milk the clock, because at that point, it doesn't become a football game. It becomes game theory, right?
Yeah.
It becomes a game of win probability. But instead, they stopped the clock for the Cowboys. And there was a play earlier on that drive where the refs had to restart the clock. And Eli Manning, it was going simultaneously with the game clock. Eli Manning simply had to milk all 40 seconds of that clock before snapping the ball. Instead, he chose to do it after 23 seconds. So he gifted them another 17 seconds, and Tony Romo brought them down, and that was the end of that. And the Giants, who were going to steal one, end up losing miserably.
Yes, incredible. Incredible last week. And I was chatting to a couple of NFL fans on Twitter, Gil, and we were talking about whether or the amount of points Dez Bryant was worth in this matchup. Mm. Have you got a number on that, Gil? Can you give us a number? Because it's the spread is 5 at the moment, but obviously without Dez Bryant, what would this number be if he was in the lineup?
Well, it's a fascinating question because if you look at where this line opened back in May, this is when these lines first get released by Cantor Gaming here in the U.S., and you know what the line was? The line was 5.
Right.
So we're really, and to be honest with you, I mean, I see it's consensus 5 still. I see a couple 4.5s creeping in, but really consensus is still 5. So if you're to believe that, then Dez Bryant isn't really worth anything. But clearly he's worth something, you would think. And I think if Dez Bryant is in this game, that number creeps down to 3.5. Maybe 3, but certainly I think a point and a half. The one thing is that if you're not a great quarterback, you're not worth a whole bunch no matter who you are. That's the one thing to sort of point out, I think. But yes, Dez Bryant, if any non-quarterback is worth something, he's worth a point and a half or so, but it's not in this line. And I think the reason for that is these two teams, meaning Dallas and Philadelphia, were so volatile in their first game that the line almost has to be what we call in no man's land, in between 3 and 7, because with the Eagles, you had a terrible team in the first half against the Falcons, and then you had everything you imagined it would be in the second half under Chip Kelly against Atlanta. With Dallas, they actually moved the ball on offense tremendously well, only to turn the ball over to the Giants. And really, though we talk about the Giants botching that game at the end, the Giants had no business being in the game, really. So you don't know what Dallas is going to be able to do without Dez Bryant over the course of a whole game. One thing for Tony Romo to be able to drive them downfield once, but over the course of a whole game, that's a tough proposition. So I think 5 reflects how difficult it is to handicap either of these two teams at the current moment.
Are you leaning one way or another, Gil? Well, one thing we've not mentioned as well here is Dallas are or have been in recent times incredible away from home. They're going for 10 straight regular season road wins, which is unheard of, really.
Well, they've already won, in that streak, 6 division road games. They're going for their 7th straight in division on the road, which is unbelievable in the NFC East to do that. And by the way, they've won 3 out of the last 5 at Philly. But that is reflective, that last part is reflective of a big stat that was first given to me from a gentleman on Twitter, since you bring up Twitter. This guy is in Australia. He goes by down at the new up underscore Dr. Matt Esquire, long Twitter handle. But he's been tracking Dallas as an underdog and as a favorite since the beginning of 2010. And if you just blindly, Dave, if you oppose Dallas as a favorite and bet Dallas as an underdog in every game since week 1 of 2010, you'd have gone, without even activating your brain, 57-25-1 against the spread. That's 69.28%. So here we have Dallas as a dog. If you're to follow that trend, that would be the play. But for me, it's a stay away.
Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles, 9:25 p.m. UK time. Headline offers as well here. Jason Witten to score a touchdown and the Dallas Cowboys to win is 4-1. Jordan Matthews to score a touchdown and the Philadelphia Eagles to win is 6-4. Let's move on to the big clash this weekend. This is a cracking matchup. The Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers. The Seahawks 33-20 on the money line. The Green Bay Packers are 10-19, and the spread is set at 3.5. The Seattle Seahawks receiving the points 10-11. The Green Bay Packers giving up 3.5 at 10-11. We've got the top two in the betting for the Super Bowl battling it out, Gil, on Monday night. The Seahawks going into Lambeau Field to face the Green Bay Packers. Looking forward to this one immensely.
Yeah, this, I mean, you said it. You said Kraken, Dave. It's your first Kraken of the year.
It's taken to week 2.
That's right. That's right. If you had Dave calling a game a cracker of a game by week 2, you are a winner. You're cashing. But you said it. This is the two probably best teams in the NFL, with the exception of the Patriots, certainly the two best in the NFC. And so, therefore, the big deal about this game is that it has home field implications for the playoffs. Whoever wins this game come the end of the season, if these two teams' records are tied, it will go to a tie of a head-to-head tiebreaker, I should say. And so the winner of this game would essentially get home field in the playoffs if it comes to that. So this is huge for that reason, if not just from a viewing standpoint, just to see how these two teams face each other. But the Packers, you know, when they're at home, there's a couple things you're obligated to say. One, first of all, they've won 9 straight at home. It's the longest active streak in the NFL. But Aaron Rodgers at home, and forgive me if I'm repeating this for the 10th time this week, but everybody's doing it because it's the most incredible stat you'll ever hear. In his past 17 games at Lambeau Field, 17 games including the playoffs, 512 pass attempts along the way, not a single interception at home, Dave, both NFL records, 41 touchdown passes in that same span. In fact, his last interception at home came in week 13 of 2012. It's unbelievable. It's incredible. Last year, 25 touchdowns and no picks at Lambeau. So you're dealing with a guy who does not make mistakes at home for whatever reason. And now he's got, you know, the Seahawks to contend with. but there's a lot wrong with the Seahawks' pass defense.
So, yeah, it's
mess up well.
You mentioned there's a lot wrong with the Seahawks' pass defense. That was evident last week, wasn't it? They gave up a league-high 8 plays of 20 yards or more to the Rams. That's unheard of in the days of the Legion of Boom, Gil, but they're missing Cam Chancellor, and that's proving crucial.
Dave, they're missing the boom. They're
yes.
Boom from the Legion of Boom. That's exactly right. And Cam Chancellor's contract holdout is kind of working out perfectly so far for him. You know, I hate to say that he'd be rooting against his teammates, but... You know, if he's being selfish, he probably is here. You said it best. 8 plays of 20 or more yards to the Rams last week. You know how many they gave up all of last year of 20 or more yards? 32. So they gave up a quarter of those types of big plays in 1 week compared to what they had given up all of last year. So, yeah, Legion of Boom, not quite as boomy right now. Should be mentioned that in the 2 games that Rodgers played Seattle last year, he only... in plays where he threw the ball downfield 15 yards or more, was 1 for 11. Well, the Seahawks gave up 7 of 8 passes for 175 yards on passes that traveled more than 15 yards last week to Nick Foles. So you give him Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau. Aaron Rodgers is facing a Seattle defense that is unlike any he's ever seen, and in a good way for him.
What's the deal with Chancellor, Gil? Can he just sit on the sidelines as long as he wants?
Well, he can and not get paid. He's welcome to do that. You know, one of the more famous contract holdouts was in the early 90s, Emmitt Smith of the Cowboys. Cowboys are where he won a Super Bowl, maybe 2. I'm not can't remember if they'd won 1 or 2 at the time, but he basically wanted the Cowboys' future Hall of Fame running back. He said, look, I want more money. You're not giving it to me. Fine, I'm sitting down. The Cowboys said, fine, we're not paying you. So Emmitt sat out the first game. Cowboys were, you know, chalked to win the Super Bowl. They lost. He sat out the second game. They lost. And they came groveling back to him. And they said, you know what, Emmitt? Come to think of it, you're right. And so I don't know if Cam Chancellor is going to have the same effect here. But if Aaron Rodgers throws for, I don't know, let's just throw out 400 yards against him on Sunday, and the Packers just roll, I don't know. That's called leverage to me. You know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And the Packers are out for revenge here, because this is, of course, a repeat of last season's NFC title game, which the Packers, Gil, had in their grasp before Brandon Bostic allowed it to slip through his hands.
Oh, literally, right?
Yes.
That was maybe one of the more incredible games. Like, that game still sits with me today. The Packers were up 16-0 at the half. Probably should have been up more, but they decided to settle for field goals or instead of going for it on fourth and short at the goal line. Then they were up 19-7 with less than 3 minutes left in that game, and you're right, eventually an onside kick that went through Bostic's hands gave the Seahawks the ball back. Seahawks actually took the lead in regulation. Packers had to kick a field goal to force overtime, and the Seahawks ended up winning it in overtime. But if you remember, it included a miraculous 2-point conversion for the Seahawks. It included an interception by Green Bay where the defender decided to just go down on his own instead of running back the ball just in case with about 5 minutes left. So there's all kinds of quirky things that allowed the Seahawks to eventually go to the Super Bowl. So yes, it is a game of revenge, and you don't remember, you know, I think we overplay revenge as handicappers and as members of the media. We're like, oh, this team lost to this team. But I think a game like this, it really did sit with them with such huge implications. And I do think the Packers are going to be ready to go in this one. You know, I'm trying to think of something positive to say about the Seahawks, and they are, you know, a team that could very well end up in the Super Bowl again this year. The big thing for them, I think, in this one, Dave, is where Green Bay is vulnerable is on the ground on defense. Last week, the Packers allowed 189 rushing yards, 5.7 yards per rush, to the Bears. Now, only the Vikings were worse in week one, and that's very consistent with the Packers. They're always giving up a lot of yards on the ground. And defensive signal caller Sam Barrington lost last week for the season with a foot injury. So the Seahawks, who had 401 rushing yards and 4 rushing touchdowns in 2 games against the Packers last season, they're going to look to exploit that and hope to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field in the process.
Do you think they'll be able to get Jimmy Graham more involved this week, Gil?
I don't know. You know, Jimmy Graham, we tend to think of him as this great tight end because he was in Drew Brees' offense. I just don't know, Dave, if Seattle has enough weapons in their receiving core to free up Graham enough. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a defensive coach, I'm going to key on Graham, and I'm going to let the other guys beat me because the other guys don't scare me that much. Not that Seattle as a team doesn't scare me. They do. But that would be my strategy anyway. And, you know, I think that's the way to go with it. The one thing is, can Jimmy Graham translate that success in an offense where, you know, Drew Brees had multiple options? I don't know if he can do it in one. Let's see it first before we proclaim him as great in this uniform.
Have you got a lean in this one, Gil?
I'd lean Green Bay, for sure. I don't like giving up the hook, 3.5. I don't like that half point. But if you put a gun to my head, the old gun to my head preface, Dave, I would lean Green Bay. The biggest, you know, the Green Bay defense is the one question mark. They do have trouble with zone read offenses historically. So the way that Russell Wilson runs that offense, they have trouble with that type of offense. But in the end, I just see Aaron Rodgers pitching the ball up and down the field on these guys, and I think they'll cover.
The final game we are going to look at, Gil, is on Tuesday morning, UK time, Monday Night Football over stateside, and it's the New York Jets at the Indianapolis Colts. The Jets are 13-5. The Colts are 5-16, and on the spread, the Jets plus 7 points with a little bit of extra juice here at 20-23. The Colts minus 7 at 20-21. We've mentioned it briefly, Gil, but let's start with a reflection on week one and with the Colts' performance against the Buffalo Bills. I think many were expecting the Colts to compete against the Bills, but that was one of the most one-sided matches on last week's slate, Gil, and Andrew Luck recorded a passer rating of just 63.6. That's particularly poor for a quarterback of his caliber.
Well, one that typically has a passer rating of 96.5, or at least that's what he averaged last year. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a knock for him last week. But I think we almost take that week and we isolate it as one week, and I don't think it's a reflection of what Andrew Luck's going to do the rest of the way. I think Buffalo's defense deserves that kind of respect. Like I said, they were doing it all last year, too, where the Bills, maybe not as dramatically as they did last week. Again, Luck not scoring until the final minute of the third quarter. But I think Andrew Luck and the Colts will be fine, and I think they will be a true contender come playoff time.
Yes, I agree. And there are slight rumours of discontent within the organisation, which has been a bit off-putting recently. Chuck Pagano in the final year of his contract. And I'm not sure whether you've got any further insight, Gil, but the suggestion there's friction between Pagano and general manager Ryan Grigson, which can't help.
Can't help. For sure it can't help, especially this early in the season, right? One game in, you've got a rumor, you know, this distraction perhaps that's flying around. And the reason that this distraction is there is because the Colts owner is a volatile guy, Jim Irsay. He's liable to do anything at any time. But there is a, you know, there is a kernel of justification here for there to be this speculation because, look, the Colts are great on offense and they're not really that good on defense. There's an understatement. And Chuck Pagano is a defensive guy. You know, all head coaches in the NFL are, by their roots, either an offensive or defensive guy. And Pagano is a defensive guy. So in that respect, Jim Irsay has some ammunition. Buffalo gashed him, for instance. We talk about Buffalo's defense, but you know, Buffalo gashed him for 147 rushing yards on 36 carries last week. So if teams are running the ball up and down the field on you, you know, Andrew Luck, and you're relying on Andrew Luck to overcome that week after week, at some point that does fall on your shoulders. So week one, maybe it's, you know, after 1 week, it's a little early to rev up the old distraction game. But, yeah, it's lingering for sure.
And we're recording this Friday afternoon, Gil. There's still a doubt about T.Y. Hilton's participation. It could be crucial that he's involved because Andre Johnson didn't do enough last week to suggest that he'll be able to shoulder the load here, Gil, for the Indianapolis Colts.
You're so right. Andre Johnson, pretty unimpressive. Just 4 catches with out of 10 targets for just 24 yards last week. And Frank Gore, their free agent pickup running back, just 31 yards on 8 rushes before he left in the second half last week. But yeah, T.Y. Hilton, the old day-to-day, Dave, just like me and you. We're all day-to-day. But his damage was to the left knee. That is the security blanket, right? That's Andrew Luck's favorite target. And are they diminished without him? I think a little. But they do have Dante Moncrief as well as Andre Johnson to pick up the slack. And I think at home, on the turf, on the national stage, the Colts are going to be okay. Will they be able to cover 7 points is another story. It's still a lot of points to give, even with Andrew Luck, even on the national stage at home, when you're facing a Jets team that does have a quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick that I think is addition by subtraction. When they lost Geno Smith, the Jets, that is, this offseason to a punch from his teammate, I don't know if folks know that, but Geno Smith not playing because a linebacker on the Jets broke his jaw with a punch in a training camp fight. And so, as a result, the veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick is the Jets' quarterback for the near future. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, we talked about the fact that Luck's passer rating last year was 96.5. You know that Ryan Fitzpatrick's was 95. That was his rating last year. So, by the way, that's not out of 100. That's out of a strange scale. But it's still a very solid passer rating. And his career has been plagued by a lack of defensive support. A lot of people like to slam Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's actually a pretty serviceable quarterback. And the Jets, who only forced 13 turnovers all of last year, forced 5 in week 1 against the Browns. So if they can keep getting the ball back for Fitzpatrick, I think the Jets will be okay. I like the Colts here to win. I don't know if they cover. That's tough.
It is, and we've spoken a lot about the Indianapolis Colts in this segment, Gil, but not really mentioned the Jets to any great degree. They beat Cleveland last week. And you mentioned the running game of the Bills getting the better of the Colts last week. Chris Ivory is a monster, isn't he?
He can be. He can be. Give him a little offensive line, he can be a very serviceable running back. Again, Buffalo, 147 rushing yards on 36 carries. The Jets will be aiming to do the same. You know, just what we talked about, Seattle's strategy is obviously going to be to keep the ball on the ground and churn clock. I think the Jets try to do the same. Move the chains, keep the clock moving, minimize Andrew Luck's chances. By the way, the Jets are waiting to hear, as the Colts are on T.Y. Hilton, the Jets are waiting to hear on their cornerback, standout cornerback Antonio Cromartie. His left knee got dinged up. But the MRI was negative, so he's day-to-day as well. They could use him in combating Andrew Luck. But Brandon Marshall, their standout free agent wideout pickup from the offseason, he looked good, 62 receiving yards and a score on 6 catches last week. So I think the Jets are improved, and though no one's terrified by them at 1-0 having beaten the lowly Browns, I think they're worth keeping an eye on.
Are we leaning Jets +7?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a lean. Just not a game I want to play.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. We've been through all 4 televised matches, and now the point in the program, it gets interesting, Gil, or very interesting, even more interesting. The Super Contest picks, Gil. 4-1 last week, which was an exceptional start to the season, and we're going to try and maintain that throughout the course of the year.
Dave, I can't ride the 4-1 reputation for the whole year. I have to do this again. All right. Well, the one I missed last week was the Houston Texans. The Texans dug themselves a huge hole against the Chiefs and couldn't quite get out of it. Couldn't recover an onside kick. They lost by a touchdown. But I'm going back to the Texans well for my first pick this week. The Texans are my play. Catching 3 points, +3 at Carolina. Ryan Mallett's going to start for the Texans instead of Brian Hoyer. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Houston. I think they're a really good football team. And again, I mentioned J.J. Watt last week. J.J. Watt, 9 tackles, 6 for a loss last week, 2 sacks. He's just unbelievable. And Carolina's big defensive player, Luke Kuechly, he may not play in the Panthers' home opener. The Panthers beat the Jaguars last week. I don't think we learned anything about the Panthers beating the Jaguars. I don't think they're that good. So I like Houston, and you're giving me 3 points. Houston's my first pick. The Texans. San Francisco at Pittsburgh. I'm going with the Steelers. The Steelers are my second pick. The Steelers are giving 5.5 or 6. In the Super Contest, it's 5.5 because the lines get locked. I'm going with the Steelers. They're on long rest. The Niners are on short rest. I like the Steelers here. They, even in defeat against the Patriots, they move the ball up and down the field. And I think Ben Roethlisberger is going to go crazy on a San Francisco defense that looked very good against the Vikings and their second-year quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater. But against Big Ben and company, it's going to be a different story. And I do think that Niners offense is not going to be able to keep up with him. So I like Pittsburgh as my second pick. Third pick is going to be the Tennessee Titans for a second week in a row. Won easily on the Titans last week against the Bucks. Well, it's basically a pick 'em at Cleveland, and Johnny Manziel's got a sore elbow. I don't think very highly of Johnny Manziel to begin with. And though it is always risky betting on a rookie quarterback going on the road, can't argue with how Marcus Mariota played last week. 13 for 16, four touchdowns, no picks. Cleveland still got some areas they got to clean up on the defensive side of the ball. They gave up a lot of yards on the ground. They allowed the Jets to convert a lot of third downs. They're penalized a lot, so I like Tennessee as my third pick. Atlanta's going to be my fourth pick. They're at the Giants. Atlanta, we briefly touched on, beat the Eagles, held on for victory. The Giants, of course, somehow botching that game against the Cowboys. I like Atlanta here, getting 2.5 points. What was lost in the Giants botching that game, Dave, is that they also didn't generate any pass rush last week, and they managed only one offensive touchdown and just 289 yards of offense against a Dallas defense that's not very good. I love the way Dan Quinn had his defense flying around the ball on Monday night against the Eagles. So Atlanta's my fourth pick, the Falcons. And then my fifth pick, dare I say it, it's the old fate of the Redskins again. I hate my Sundays because I'm rooting on my bet against my boyhood team, but I'm going to do it again, this time with the Rams. Same spread as it was last week. The Dolphins were 3.5 against the Redskins last week. The Rams are 3.5 at Washington this week. And I like the Rams even more than I like the Dolphins. Their defense is just outstanding. And this kid, Aaron Donald, if it weren't for J.J. Watt, we might be talking about Aaron Donald as the best defender in the NFL. He's amazing, and he is surrounded by Michael Brockers and Long and Quinn and just an amazing defense. And I think Nick Foles, who played very well last week against the Seahawks, is going to have a lot of success against the Redskins defense. So I'll happily give the 3.5 against the Redskins team that's missing their starting strong safety in Duke Iheanacho and their best wideout in DeSean Jackson. Neither will play. So I like St. Louis. So in review, the Texans, the Steelers, the Titans, the Falcons, and the Rams. Those are my five super contest plays, Dave.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. And just to clear something up, when I said now we get to the interesting part of the program, that wasn't in any way a slight on what we'd heard from you before, Gil.
No, I appreciate it. I understood. I took it with its proper context.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. Superb. Thank you for your company, Gil. Good luck with those five in the Super Contest this week, and look forward to catching up again next week. And remember, if you want to follow Gil on Twitter, you can do at Beating the Book, and check out Gil's podcasts. I presume, Gil, I listened to the Guessing the Lines podcast on Monday. I presume that your weekend megapod is out now as well, Gil.
It is up and ready for consumption, sir.
Do check that out at Beating the Book, and this podcast will be tweeted at D. Kellner as well, so you can check out my handle there. Thank you once again, Gil, and we'll catch up next week.
Dave, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.